fine crouton.
It's word salad with Amelia Discreet, only on 95 BFM.
Kia ora, Amelia.
Hello. Sorry, no etymology today.
Oh, no etymology. Oh, just words in general. How are you going?
I'm slightly losing my mind a little bit. I've been learning Blink-182 songs on guitar.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
That feels like a great use of lockdown time.
It's certainly a use of lockdown time. because I've been losing my mind slightly, I thought for this week's word salad, I'd go into my happy place.
Excellent.
Which is, of course, philosophy.
For some people, it might be a nice garden or maybe a warm bath, but for Amelia, it's philosophy.
Yeah, the more dense and boring, the more I'm into it. So we're talking about some linguistic, philosophically stuff. So I want to start by asking you a question, Rach.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm ready, slightly nervous.
No one's ever answered this properly, so give it a good shot. What's the relationship between the words we use and the real world?
Oh, nothing.
What?
Oh, I don't know.
That's a massive call, but I could...
Everything?
Yeah. What got your logic there?
I don't know.
Just first word answer.
Maybe it would be the least expected thing.
What is the relationship between language and the world?
Well, I mean, that remains to be demonstrated, but I think a lot of the, like, common, like, the, like what sometimes in academia you call, like, the folk understanding, like, the normal everyday idea, is that words name things in the world, right?
Yeah.
So when I say the chair in my kitchen, I'm talking about an object that exists in my kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm talking about the color yellow, I'm talking about this property of yellowness that is there and things have, right?
Yes, I'm following so far.
So, we get to a little bit of a problem when languages have break up the world in different ways.
Okay, how do you mean?
So, in Russian, they don't have one word for blue, they break blue up into little bits.
Oh, how does that work?
There's like different, like depending on what shade it is, it falls into like a different category. And there are other languages where blue and green are one word.
Turquoise.
Yeah. So if it was in English, you might the words blue and the words green don't exist. You just have the word turquoise and everything that falls within that whole kind of area.
Okay.
You call turquoise.
I'm keeping up.
So you get this idea called, related to this is this idea that I want to talk about, linguistic determinism.
Linguistic determinism. Dum, dum, dum.
So this is also called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, although people are going to get annoyed about that. People have arguments about everything. They have arguments about whether you should put those two names next to each other with a hyphen. But basically this is the idea that... The language that we use, like, and our like native tongue has kind of puts like strict limits on the ways in which we can understand the world.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. I think I'm starting to get the idea now.
Yeah. So like under linguistic determinism, if you are a native Russian speaker and you have these different words for these different, what in English we would call shades of blue, you experience those colours differently and it like changes how you understand the world.
My brain feels like it is really stretching this morning.
Really, when I said it has nothing to do with the world, actually it has everything.
So the thing about linguistic determinism is in a lot of ways it's not true, the way that it has been put forward traditionally, but in some interesting ways it makes you think, which is why we're talking about it,
because
it makes you think.
So is linguistic determinism, is it like about specific words having specific effects, or is it more of a broader concept about how words determine culture?
Both. So the specificities of your language and the structure of it and the terms that it uses is like has a strong control over the ways you are able to understand the world.
Okay.
So, like, the original case, so Old Mate Worf.
So he
was like, I'm not happy with Sapir, my friend. He's not gone far enough. I've been studying the Hopi language, and they don't have tenses in the way that most languages we understand, like, we're familiar with, have tenses.
Yeah.
Most things are, like, pretty much everything is in the present tense. And so he chatted with a bunch of these, like, Hopi speakers, and he decided it seems like their perception of time is radically different than people who have been brought up with a tensed language.
Okay, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and so you also have, there is a, like, Australian Aboriginal language called, I'm going to pronounce this very badly, but I'm going to give it maybe a shot, Gugu Yimithir, where you don't have right and left, you just have cardinal directions, so north, south, east and west.
Oh, okay.
And it's like a very different understanding of positionality and, like, directedness. Particularly when you're talking about, like, looking at images, because things, if you move the orientation of the image, then things stop being on the left and right. They move because it's about cardinal directions.
That makes so much more sense to me.
Well, having just north,
just
south, east, and west.
One way, and that's
the way.
East. Always. It will always
turn
be east.
Yeah.
And one more interesting example of this thing that we're going to talk about whether or not it's real in a second. So ancient Greeks don't classify colours at all in the way that we do. It's more about being light or dark.
Okay.
So that's why in, like, people who had to read, like, the Iliad or Ulysses in classics, or just read it for fun because you're a big nerd, are probably familiar with the term the wine dark sea. Because there's no word for blue. There's a word, glaucos, which can refer to light blue things, but it also refers to light green, grey, and yellow things.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I'm starting. So I think I'm starting to get it, but it is kind of hard to wrap your head around as a concept, because you sort of have to be able to wrap your head around concepts from other cultures at the same time, which is a lot to do in your brain at 9:45 on a Wednesday morning.
It's a lot to think about, but I figured people had some free time, so we could plant the seed.
Why not have an existential crisis? Perfect.
But yeah, so the thing is, like, what we've been saying about, like, this language uses cardinal directions instead of left and right, ancient Greek doesn't have a word for blue, etc. It's like those things are true, right? Those are just facts about the language.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about linguistics determinism is you kind of need to decide whether or not that means that if you talked to an ancient Greek person, or if you were, like, thrown into the mind of an ancient Greek person, your experience of the world would be radically different.
Okay, I'm starting to get why people might think this is a bit controversial.
Yeah, and so you have some, you get into some issues, partly because Sapir and Worf are doing anthropology in, like, the 20s and 30s, which, as people who have looked into anthropology might know, was a racist time.
A very racist time, yes, this is
and,
true.
And so a lot of the studies are, like, fairly dismissive of the people, and they kind of come to, like, wild, exoticizing conclusions.
Right.
So a lot of the, like, original data about the, like, Hopi speakers is kind of difficult to take at face value.
Right.
I think
you can probably sort of safely agree, though, that language does give you a window into, like, the way different cultures experience the world, or different peoples experience the world. But I kind of see exactly what you're saying here, is that if you filter that through a European lens from a certain time, it's still going to give you probably more about that European lens than anything else, isn't it?
Someone's texted about Aboriginal language, saying that in one of them, it also, there's no counting either. It's either one or it's many.
Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. Thank you for that, Texter.
That is really interesting. There's some stuff about that if you look into, because there are other languages that do that as well. And people have talked about that in regards to linguistic determinism. But I think what you were saying about ending up with it through a European lens is really interesting, because one really interesting problem with this is the idea of translation and communicating your experiences.
So we've got a few problems with that in our sort of constitutional formation in New Zealand, perhaps.
Yeah, but if two languages, if their linguistic concepts don't map onto the world in the same way, how can you express that in your language? It gets very you get some translation problems.
You definitely do. Amelia, I feel like my brain's been fully expanded and I'll probably be thinking about this all day. So I do appreciate you bringing us a bit of philosophy this morning.
I kind of thought there's not really a kernel of this, but it's an interesting thing to think about, and there's a lot to look into if you're interested.
So remind us of the name of the concept again.
So we're talking about linguistic determinism, also known as the strong Sapir-Whorf hypothesis.
Pithy. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Amelia. Looking forward to seeing you in studio, hopefully, next week.
Me too.
Fingers crossed.
Can I leave you with a thought, Rachel?
Leave us with a thought, please.
It's more of a quote from Nietzsche. Perpetual mustachioed sad boy. Rachel, language is a prison.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's the thought.
Thanks, Amelia.
All right, bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Vinaigrette originally referred to small vinegar.
Word salad with Amelia Discreet on 95 BFM.